All right, we're just going to continue with our series. Let's do that, please. The book of Proverbs. We have looked at the big five. Can you remember who the big five are? Right, you've got two people on both ends of the spectrum. These are only the people that appear in Proverbs. Well, you have the righteous man and you have the wicked man. Right, they're the two polar opposites, the righteous and the wicked. Then in between there, you've got some fellows. You've got the fool. You've got the scorner. All right. And who's the third guy? The simpleton, the simple man. All right. So we've looked at those. Those are the big five. And now we're continuing to do this sightseeing tour that Solomon puts us on. And it reminded me, anyway, of the old nursery rhyme. Tinker, tailor, soldier, sailor, rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief. And so we're looking at three more of these people now. These are less prevalent, but Solomon has a lot to say about these guys. And who are they? Well, they are the guy that's diligent, and he would be the rich man in most cases. Diligent, you know, you reap what you sow, and diligent people generally do well. And so I was going to talk about him tonight, but we're going to cut it short a little bit tonight, I think, for obvious reasons. We'll get to him next week. And then we've already looked at the thief. Who remembers? Who, according to the Proverbs, who's the biggest thief? Anybody remember? You'll never. I mean, if you didn't know it, you would never guess it. It's the sluggard, right? The slothful man is the biggest thief. And if you think about it, that's true, because he's not just robbing himself; he's robbing others as well. Absolutely true. Okay, so we've been over the thief, and now who's left in this trio? Tonight we'll talk about the poor and the needy, all right? The poor and the needy. The thief, the poor man, and the diligent man. Now, had the nation of Israel obeyed God's Mosaic law, I mean, had they obeyed what God had told them to do, their land would have stayed fruitful all the time. They would have been taken care of all the time. There would be no such thing. There would have been very little poverty. There certainly would never have been oppression of the poor, because these things kind of multiply on each other. Because God had laws set up to ensure that that wouldn't happen. All they had to do was obey them. And the laws, obeying those laws was to their advantage. The only reason they wouldn't obey them is just because of disbelief. Every seventh day was a what? What was the seventh day of every week? It was a Sabbath, right? The people got to rest their bodies, but that's not all. The land got to rest. Very important that the land had rest once, at least once a week, okay? Not to mention the animals. The animals worked hard all week long. They needed a rest. And then every seventh year was a what?
A
sabbatic year. Okay, the sabbatical year. Both the land and all of the workers, can you imagine, were commanded by God to take the entire year off. I've never had even a month off in my life, never mind a year. But that was the law of Israel. You'll rest for an entire year. And then that's not all. Every 50th year, anybody know what that was called?
Jubilee.
Yeah, the year of Jubilee, all right? The land, not only the land lay fallow for an entire year, but not only that, but according to nearly the whole chapter of Leviticus 25, the land was supposed to be returned to their original owners, no matter what. The land went back to the original owner. So it was by these three different, the weekly Sabbath, the 7 year Sabbath, and the 50 year Sabbath. That or they're not all Sabbaths, but that's how the Lord made sure that he would restore the fertility of the land, do that regularly. And really, that year of Jubilee, believe it or not, was to prevent wealthy people from just hoarding everything, you know, because wealth seems to beget more wealth. And so these guys would just amass these gigantic land grabs, these huge allotments and gigantic farms, and they would have a monopoly on everything. They could control the whole economy, and God prevented that every 50th year with the year of Jubilee. According to 2 Chronicles 36 and verses 20 and 21, the nation was absolutely willing to comply with these three things. No, no, absolutely not. They refused to obey God's special laws for the land. I mean, why would you want to work when God said take the year off? Because you don't believe that you can, either you're greedy for more or you don't believe that your needs can be met, right? So 70 years in a row they didn't obey the year of Jubilee because God was so far out of sight and out of mind. So God sent them into captivity for 490 years so that every seventh year that the land would get its rest. And that's exactly what happened. He sent them to Babylon, and the land made up for the time that it was not being rested, as well as them not being rested and their animals not being rested. Now, let's talk about what Proverbs says about what causes poverty and what causes people to be needy. Now, I can find four causes. There may be more, but I found these four. Okay, number one, people are poor and needy. The number one reason statistically in Proverbs is because they will not work. They refuse to work. That's kind of the condition that we're in right now, by the way. I came across a stat by accident. I wasn't even looking for it. There's all kinds of trades. There's plumbers, there's carpenters, there's all kinds of kind of work that people can do to work with their hands. Trade schools used to be a big thing in America, you know. But this is actually a frightening statistic. For every five tradesmen that are retiring, you know, whether you're, no matter what the skill is, plumbing, carpentry, whatever it is, only two are replacing them. Only two. I heard that from this guy, Mike Rowe. I don't know if you know who he is. He's on this. And he's sounding the alarm of the kind of trouble that we're going to be in as a nation if we don't get this fixed. But it's attributed to our welfare system, the multiple handouts, entitlements, and people don't feel like they need to work. They can, why should I work when the government will bail me? And you know, so people are not working. There's tons of jobs even right now. You hear it on the radio all the time. You hear it everywhere, begging for workers. People aren't working. They're not working. So work is available, but they choose to be blissfully ignorant about it. They don't want to know about the opportunities. Let's look at some verses. Chapter 10 and verse 4. Notice, he becometh poor, that's the guy we're talking about here. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand. All right, but the hand of the diligent make rich. What's a slack hand? The sluggard, he doesn't want to work. He just refuses to work. Skip over to chapter 20. Chapter 20, verse 13. Says, love not sleep. Why not? Lest thou come to poverty. So it shouldn't be surprising that the slothful guy is usually the guy that winds up poor. 21:17. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. I just want to play. Are we having fun yet? All I care about is having fun and playing. Life is a big carnival. Life is just a big joke. I don't have to be responsible. Okay, then you're going to be poor. That's what Proverbs says. Another reason that people are, that they won't work is because they're drunk all the time. 23, chapter 23 and verse 21. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty. Because neither one of them are capable of earning a day's wage. And so this is the reason for people being poor. Those are four reasons that are given. Well, that's actually just one reason. You refuse to work, and I gave you four different scenarios there. Now, that means time, energy, money, opportunity, all of that is wasted when leisure and pleasure and alcohol and slothfulness, when those things occupy a life, and you wind up in the poorhouse. And unfortunately, this is becoming more and more and more true, I think. Some people weren't disciplined when they were young. Dad was in absentia, and mom wasn't holding anything down. And they were never taught the importance of work. Happy is the kid that grows up in a house. He may not like it at first, but he will sing his dad's and mom's praises afterward when they find out that, boy, dad was sure right, you know. Look at chapter 13 and verse 18. 13:18. It says, poverty and shame shall be to him that refuseth instruction. Right? Your dad told you, you can't be lazy. You gotta get after it. You gotta show initiative. You gotta get some motivation in you. You gotta be hustling. That's all good advice. Listening to orders, obeying them, paying attention to people that have more experience and thus more wisdom than I do, being willing to be reproved if you need it, and not making the same mistakes over and over and over again. Things like respecting the authorities in your life. If you do that from an early age, you won't have a problem with supervision, which is absolutely essential, especially for an entry-level job. To get your foot in the door and then work your way up the ladder. You've got to respect the supervision over you and do the best you can. You know, what was the only request the prodigal made of his father? Anybody remember? He only asked for one thing. Yeah, no, well, that was afterward. Father, give me. Father, give me. Those are the exact King James words. Father, give me. Completely the opposite of what he should have been saying. All right, but then, of course, after God whipped him within an inch of his life out there in the fields of hell, he came back and said, make me one of your hired servants, right? In Luke 15, he learned the hard way the value of his father's discipline and the fact that hard work is a joy. You know, we think of it as a curse. I mean, actually, that's true theologically in the book of Genesis, but you ought not to look at work that way because you got to do it the rest of your life, just about. All right, so we're looking at causes why people are poor. Cause number one, I don't want to work. Okay, then you don't want to have. Then you don't want to survive in the world then. Cause number two, people are needy and poor because they are all talk and no action. That's what Solomon says, okay? Look at chapter 14. And verse 23. Notice, in all labor there is profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury. Right? You talk a good game, but when it comes time to putting that talk to shoe leather, oh no. Oh no. Right? It reminds me of the Lord's parable of the two sons in Matthew 28. Right? And that's a long parable, and we don't have the time tonight for me to go over that. But the second son said yes to, yes, man. He was yes to everything, but he was all talk and no action. Check it out, Matthew 21:28-32. All right, the third cause of poverty. What are the causes so far? I just want work. I mean, there's opportunity, but I don't care. I'm not working. Number two, I'm all talk and no action. Third cause for poverty, they make horrendous, unbelievably stupid financial decisions. Unbelievably dumb dealings with finances. And how that usually manifests itself is you just dive headlong into a get-rich-quick scheme. Right? This is a good deal, and you wind up losing everything in your good deal. Chapter 21, Proverbs 21 and verse 5. The thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but of everyone that is hasty, only to want. I rushed into that deal, and it definitely didn't work out. See. And then you got to be so, so careful that you don't co-sign for people. Signing notes, assuming other people's debts. Back in chapter 6, the first 5 verses are all about that, about how dumb it is to co-sign for people, especially strangers, chapter 11 and verse 15. I don't even know this guy, but I'm going to co-sign for him. Look at chapter 17 and verse 18. Chapter 17, verse 18, a man void of understanding striketh hands and becometh surety in the presence of his friend. Right? That's a good guy. But Solomon says, the Holy Spirit says, this guy has no understanding. He'll shake hands at the drop of a hat, put his signature on something, and then he'll wind up paying the bill. Not smart. You got the same thing in chapter 22 and verses 26 and 27. You know, it's interesting. The Jews were permitted to loan money to other Jews, okay? But they were never to charge any interest. You see that word usury a lot in the Old Testament and penury. The you could loan money to a Jew, but never with interest, according to Leviticus 25, verses 35 through 38. And actually, that started back in Exodus 22. No interest. But you could charge interest to a Gentile, interestingly enough. You could lend them a money to a Gentile, and you could also charge that guy interest, according to Deuteronomy 23 and verse 20. But there was always a warning. If we had the time to, I mean, it would be a sermon unto itself. Honestly, it would. Always a warning about going surety, all right? Going surety, assuming debts larger than you can pay. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. Friends, this is epidemic in America. Epidemic. 22:7. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. You want to put yourself in debt, you've now made yourself a slave. And people don't care. You know, I mean, that little piece of plastic, that will buy me some time. I don't have to pay for it right there. And so I somehow subconsciously think that, you know, it's not hurting me now, it won't hurt me later. Oh, yeah, it will. Oh, yeah, it will. Absolutely, it will. All right, so what are the causes of poverty? I'm lazy and I refuse to work. Or I'm just wicked and I refuse to work. All right? I'm all talk and no action. And then thirdly, I just make horrendous, unwise financial dealings. Usually, I'm caught in get-rich-quick schemes, Ponzi schemes, all kinds of schemes. Now, there's a fourth reason in Proverbs. And that is that a person can be poor because of events over which you have absolutely no control. And that's true also. It's our job to be able to discern which is which, if possible. And I'll get into that. Chapter 13, verse 13:23. Much food is in the tillage of the poor, but there is that is destroyed for want of judgment. In other words, a poor man's fields can produce a good crop, and then here comes a hurricane, or here comes pestilence, and it eats the whole crop. Right? That stuff happens. That's essentially the idea of 13:23 there. Okay, you have the same idea in 18:23. The poor useth entreaties, but the rich answereth roughly. Okay. Now the prophets, mercilessly condemned wicked rulers, ruthless businessmen that actually took advantage of the poor. They made it their business to crush the poor, to seize whatever they had. You have long treatises by the prophets, major and minor prophets. Isaiah 3, verses 13 through 15. Isaiah 10, verses 1 through 4. Amos really got on people about this. Amos 2, verses 6 and 7. Chapter 4, verse 1. Chapter 5, verse 11 and 12. Chapter 8, verses 4 through 10. Amos spends a lot of ink condemning these satanic businessmen who made it their business to rip off the poor. So when there's justice in the land, the people fear the Lord. And then the poor have a voice, all right? And they have protection from oppression. Now, God, how do you think God sees oppressing the poor? Is God happy with that? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Chapter 14, verse 31. He that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker. When you do evil things to a poor person, you actually are doing it to God. All right, but he that honoreth him hath mercy on the poor. Okay? Friends, God does not respect the rich more than he respects the poor. He's no respecter of persons. He doesn't like people because they have their act together any more than anybody else. Chapter 22 and verse 2. 22:2. The rich and poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. Yeah, that's the bottom line with that. The poor, are the poor made in the image of God? Absolutely. All right, so we treat the poor the way you would treat God, basically. All right. Churches that show deference to the rich, which was a huge problem in the first century, and we won't admit it, but it's a problem in America too. You know, they've forgotten what James calls the royal law, right? Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Okay? All right, now let's get practical. How can we help the poor? How can we help the poor? By the way, before we do that, let me just show you one more thing in chapter 30, if you'll all turn there, please. Chapter 30, and look at verse, these are the words of Agur. Let's pick it up in verse 7. Proverbs 30, verse 7. Two things have I required of thee, deny me them not before I die. Here's number one, remove far from me vanity and lies. And then here's the second one. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me. All right, don't let me live. I don't want to be poor. Lord, don't let me be poor, and don't let me be rich either. Okay? And let me live within my means. All right, if I'm a middle class guy, I'm not looking for caviar every single night. Okay? And then he gives a reason why he doesn't want to be either rich or poor in verse 9, lest I be full and deny thee. Does that happen? I got everything I need. I don't never eat it. Pretty soon I'm not thankful anymore. Right? I'm trusting in myself. I'm trusting in my circumstances. I don't have to ask God for my daily bread. All right? I'll be full and deny thee and say, who's the Lord? Or lest I be poor. And what do most poor people do? How do they survive? Steal and take the name of my God in vain. So this man prays, Lord, let me be middle class. I want to be middle class guy. I don't want to be rich and I don't want to be poor. It's interesting. And you know what? That's what most of us are. And that's actually a gift of God. The rich have massive problems. They have unfathomable problems. That's why they have such a high suicide rate. But the poor have problems too. Huge problems. All right, how do we help them? To begin with, don't look down on them. Don't look down on the poor. And when you do that, what you're really doing is you're saying to yourself, I'm better than this guy. That's exactly what you're doing. Chapter 14 and verse 21. He that despiseth his neighbor sinneth. But he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he. Happy is he. Right? God cares about these people. He cares about the poor. He cares about the needy. And we should too, right? He doesn't like them being exploited. When people exploit these people, they find themselves in a battle with God. They may not realize that, but they are. 22, chapter 22, and verse 22. Rob not the poor, because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate. Why? For the Lord will plead their cause and spoil the soul of those that spoil them. In other words, there's payback. Payday someday, right? Okay. This is not just in Proverbs. Moses said it in the second law, Deuteronomy 15, thou shalt not harden thy heart, nor shut thy hand. Okay? Deuteronomy 24, don't let the morning dawn. If you've made a pledge, you better have that pledge fulfilled before you wake up in the morning. Okay? So, the first thing, then, is to make sure that you don't look down on these people. That's how you help them. Don't let them think that you think you're better than they are. All right. Secondly, just by being a good citizen where you live, okay, we can actually vote correctly and help promote laws that are fairly enforced, that are just and right. 29, chapter 29, verse 7. The righteous considereth the cause of the poor, but the wicked regardeth not to know it. Okay. Chapter 28, in verse 3. A poor man that oppresseth the poor is like a sweeping rain which leaveth no food. Right. I mean, rain's supposed to be the key element to grow a crop. So it's like raining and nothing grows. And so you have other verses, 31:9, speak up and judge fairly, defend the rights of the poor and needy. Chapter 29, verse 14, the king that faithfully judgeth the poor, his throne shall be established forever. I mean, God cares about this. That people are treated fairly and with dignity, regardless of their status. I mean, very solemn statements about how God wants these people treated. So when you treat these people kindly and with dignity, you're investing with the Lord. And he'll see to it that you'll get your payback, a good payback. All right? Now, that doesn't mean that you give to get, which many people do, by the way. You don't give to get. But I think we get the picture. He that hath pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and the Lord will pay back what he has given. Chapter 19, verse 17. Now, here's the third thing that's very practical. Let's say in a church situation, we have a deacon's fund, and we try to use our deacon's fund if necessary. And then we have individual responsibilities. Now, here's what the Bible says, and here's what Proverbs says. Before the church helps at all right, the family has the first obligation to assist their own needy. It's the family's responsibility, and God wants that order kept. In fact, the New Testament makes a big deal out of that in 1 Timothy chapter 5. All right, verses 4 and 8. Because now that leaves the church free to help people that have nobody to share their burdens with. They don't have a family. All right, and that's the way it was in the first century and at other times. Chapter 21 and verse 13. Whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. That's a sobering passage. Now, friends, this is my, at least my third pastorate now. I've got almost 3 decades of experience in the pastorate. And I wish I could say that I've had no experience with con artists. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. I can't say that there's never been a week, ever, in 3 decades, that the phone hasn't rang at least once with someone trying to scam the church for money. Happened just yesterday. This guy calls, my girlfriend's pregnant. I need 2 nights in the hotel. I'm sorry. There's all kinds of jobs out there. Clean yourself up and get a job. They have no conception of what the church even is. They think the church exists to be fleeced. No conception whatsoever. Con artists. Right? And they usually fake that they're believers, that they're Christians. Right? We're just passing through town and we need help. I lost so much money in my first pastorate. I was pastor for 8 years in Blaine on the Canadian border. I probably lost $500. And then I finally repented and I confessed my sin and told God I wasn't going to get scammed anymore. And then I got scammed in my second ministry in Kent again, giving to con artists. So I think I finally got it right now. I hope I do. Because you're not only are you not helping them, you're just aiding and abetting their wickedness. That's all you're doing. You know, and the people that I've given money to over the years, never once have not one of them ever written a thank you letter to the church. Never once. Never once. So I think we have a responsibility to treat the poor correctly and to make discerning judgments about people. But we also have a responsibility to exercise caution, okay, and wisdom before we do more harm than good, which I am infinitely guilty of. I'd like to have my $500 back, frankly. I really would. And I regret every dime that I gave to these ne'er-do-well scam artists. I truly do. But when someone is really in need, and particularly the people that are in a situation due to no fault of their own, something just went haywire, it was completely out of their control. Well, we can get a transdispensational truth from the Olivet Discourse. I mean, the clearest indication that someone loves the Lord in the tribulation will be that you helped the poor people in the poor believers in the tribulation that didn't take the mark of the beast. That will be the one thing. That will be the only question. Did you help them? Did you go visit them in prison? Did you give them something to eat? And so this is what God values. And he'll put us to the test sometimes. It's highly possible that several of us have entertained angels unawares. That's possible. This guy Bernard of Clairvaux, he's a Frenchman. He wrote the beautiful hymn, Jesus, the Very Thought of Thee. I like what he said. He said, justice seeks out the merits of the case, but pity only regards the need. In other words, pity is mindless, but justice has a brain. All right, it'll examine, is this a con or is this legitimate? But you know, if God dealt with us on the basis of justice only, where would any of us be? Right? So this is a balancing act, and we want to be careful. All right. I went longer than I wanted to go tonight, so...